Welcome to Miracle Nutrition. I am your ghost host. No? I'll try it again. Welcome to Miracle Nutrition with Hearty Wired. I am your spirit guide. No, let me try it again. One more try. Let me do it again. Welcome to Miracle Nutrition with Hearty White. I am the...
You know, I was in New York City recently, and I told you all about this, but I forgot a funny thing that happened to me. It was such a little thing. And you know how in New York City just strange stuff happens to you and you forget half of it. So I'm in Chinatown and I'm standing on the corner of Mott and Pell, and I'm looking east on Pell towards Confucius Plaza. And then flying right towards me comes a ghost wearing a top hat. Now my first thought is, don't take a CD, don't take a CD. But then I'm thinking, well, it's not even the right part of town for that. What's going on? And flies right up in my face. I guess I made eye contact, which you don't do with ghosts or humans or anything anywhere, not just in New York City. But I would say avoid eye contact generally. Even at the eye doctor, when they ask you specifically and explicitly, look into my eyes, say, I can't do that for you. The ghost flies right up on me. And it says, I am a ghost from Gangs of New York Times. And I said, Gangs of the New York Times? He goes, no, not Gangs of New York Times, from the Gangs of New York Times. I go, oh. He goes, yes, the era. I go, oh, you've made a mistake. Not error, era. Oh, y'all speak so much differently back then. And I guess he had come from... there's a street off of there, I guess it's called Doyer Street, and they used to have gangs in New York, 19th century types back there, stabbing one another. And just so many that the street was red with blood and corpses and everything. You couldn't even get in there. It was really blocked with bodies. And this is an all, but all different colorful gangs, as Martin Scorsese has... actually, we would say gabaskizi, like that. So he's pointed out, like, a lot of them had very long shirts or very tall hats. But everybody knew to have, like, a shtick, like a gimmick. And this ghost come up on me. He had the top hat gimmick, which I thought was cute. And I told him so. And this flustered him briefly. He said, I'm not here to entertain, for your entertainment or something like that. By this time, you know, New York City, it robs you of your attention a lot. And I had changed focus and I was looking at something else altogether. And he got very angry at this, you know, because when he was alive, he was used to commanding that kind of attention. I don't know whether he was an important gang member, but he got stabbed early on. You get stabbed on your first day, and that's sad. But even if he'd lived to the end of his life, it was the 19th century, you'd think that something would have happened, even that souls don't get recycled. I thought, you know, maybe all my friends have been reincarnated, you know, and I'm stuck in this tavern with no corporeal substance. I don't even know what they call it. I'm not able to lift a tankard anymore. And that must be discouraging for them. So I thought, I'm going to listen to this fella. That's the least I can do, right? So I paid attention to him a little bit. And he said, what are you doing here? And what are all these people in my neighborhood? And I said, well, it never was your neighborhood, was it? I mean, you know, y'all come in displaced people or plants or whatever. But my gosh, my friend, we ended up spending the rest of the day together and looking at records. And we helped each other out because I would flip through the records and he would go, nah, nah, nah. And it saved me the time of doing that. The thing is, I don't like to leave. I love to record shop, but when I take them home, I go, oh, I've made a terrible mistake. Why'd I do that? It's like if sub do that with puppies, all sorts of things. This, I don't even go to orphanages. I go, I do not need that. That's the last thing I need, really. And I'm even reluctant to check my front stoop because I know from my Stooges education there could be a baby in a basket wrapped in gingham. Why gingham, I do not know. But a lot of times they would wrap back in the 30s. Here, I'm just going to give you a lesson. As you get older, you want to think, I want to be an expert in something. And what have I spent the most time learning about, looking at, and, you know, the decades add up, and all of a sudden, you become an inadvertent or perhaps even reluctant expert. And so I feel like because of the Three Stooges, now I'm no expert on the Three Stooges. I just know what I know. But it begins to accumulate. And then by extension, I think I know everything about popular culture in the 30s. Just by, you know, really by paying attention to this, all the jokes, because you don't want it to be dated. Oh, so desperately, I'm sitting there in the 70s as a young teen thinking, I don't want this. I'm not going to allow this to be dated. I'm going to search this out. Who is this Seabiscuit? You know, there's no reason I can't watch. There must be some footage of Seabiscuit running and everything like that. And you go on, you learn these things. Now, in the 30s, they had a lot of slang that we don't have now. And so, you know, it'd be difficult. Now, I time travel. I don't like to say it a lot. And I didn't say it to this ghost, you know, that I had told him. I didn't say, oh, I've been to, you know, 1860s New York City. And I wasn't super impressed. It was an odor to it. You know, they had that collect pond, like I said before, and then they filled it in, they put the tombs on it, they put a prison on it, which is, and then the prison started to sink. This is the turn of the century one. They kept building prisons there, thinking, this time it won't happen. And this was sinking into the ground prison. And if you're on the lower floor of the prison, you think, there's a dampness. And a lot of the prisoners were noticing that their books were starting to get moldy or something. I don't know how they noticed it, actually. I think they were just walking in standing water, fetid sewage. Some people put an R in it. Hey, you know what I'm thinking of doing? I don't mean to digress, and I am going to get back to expertise and things that you learn just through experience, like encountering ghosts or studying history or learning about the Three Stooges. But I want to digress a little because I am also interested in languages. Now, I'm not going to speak any here because the minute you say a word or two from a language, the comments will erupt like language is a weird thing. And now there's lots of videos on YouTube of people speaking languages to others and surprising them. Now, the only way to really do this is to come from a group of people that are renowned for their ignorance. And then you go up to the person whose language you speak, and you speak their language fluently, and they look at you as if you were a baboon. Now, there's a wonderful Kafka story, I think, what's it called, Before the Academy, or Delivering Something with the Academy, or something about a monkey who was captured, and on his way back to England or wherever he's coming, they share booze with him and cigars, and they talk, and he learns the language, and he starts to dress in suits, and by the time he gets there, he's like fully acclimated to their culture. And so people are going, how did you learn English? And he says, well, I was in a, you know, I was in a cage on a ship. Well, this is kind of similar. I guess it is. So yeah, eight people come in, like myself, would walk in to a restaurant or something, and then speak in the language of the proprietor. Sometimes it's a challenge. I have done it. I did it. I learned the secret twin language of a person. I paid their twin thousands of dollars, learned the secret twin language, and went into one of the stores that the twin owns and walked right up to the counter and went, like that. And they cried and threw up and shot me. Because nobody else, how would anybody know that? And so they thought they were in a dream. And that's happened to me a lot when I'm out. Did you ever, you know, I think I might be dreaming. And I'm going to test it. Oh, don't do that. I don't even do it in your dreams. I'm going to test to see if this is a dream. Because that might, you may take that habit into your waking life. And that's a bad one. If you ever anywhere and you hear somebody, like you're on a plane or in a restaurant, and you hear somebody go, I'm going to test and see if I'm in a dream. Just run. Because you wonder what they're going to do. Because, I don't know, that happens. I think it does. I don't want to get you alarmed. Oh, my goodness. Here's the thing. How do you prepare somebody without alarming them? And that's teaching children. You say, hey, kids, I'm going to tell you a story about it's about monsters eating you. And isn't that crazy? And what you're trying to do is trying to prepare them without scaring them. You want them to be scared enough, but kind of educate them. You know what I mean. We do this all the time. Does Hardy do it when he speaks on the radio? No, I'm not trying to educate you. Oh, my God, how arrogant of me. Literally, I'm not. It's so easy for me to be self-deprecating. I don't have to. There's no effort. I do it sort of unconsciously. Other people tell me I'm doing it. And they say, you're not explicitly self-deprecating. Like, you don't say it. You just do it through your actions. You know, I see you deprecate yourself through what you do and not what you say. And I say, thank you. I understand. I think I understand what you're saying. I am. Are you a fool? The thing about being a fool, this is a wonderful thing about being a fool. As a fool, I notice that some people think that you're an exquisite fool, like some kind of genius fool, not just a regular one. Nobody could be that foolish. Perhaps he is speaking in parables. That kind of thing. I love it. I love it. And, you know, that whole Oscar Wilde thing about it's better to keep your mouth closed and be thought a fool. There's a man who never kept his damn mouth closed. Don't take any advice about reticence from Oscar Wilde. He talked too much. He had too many opinions on everything. My goodness, Oscar, give it a just take it in, you know? You don't have to chime in on everything. And my goodness, isn't the internet like that? Internet's one big internet poll. That's what I believe. I believe everybody feels like it's voting. I need to get on there and make my voice heard. You don't even know what you think. But go on in there. Dive in. And if you're asking me, no one is. I say, blah, 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 blah. Well, why are you talking, Hardy? I'm trying to devalue words. I'm trying to make them useless. I'm flooding the market with them. I'm trying to point out, you know, how they're useful and useless at the same time, are they not? And yes, I don't know. I'm just opposed to. I think once you are in love with stories and making things make sense or make a narrative out of things, you force everything into the story. And so I find that people have sort of think they've discovered the story of life, and then they're dragging me into it and say, and you are. I go, whoa, 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 whoa. I'm not, I don't know that it is a story. So I would like to, can I write my own character? No. Can we improvise our own parts? No. You're in the story, whether you want to be or not. I don't want to be. Oh, my goodness, how to lift yourself out. Well, I am in a poem. I'm in a poem. I got a lot of flack for saying, pronouncing P-O-E-M as P-O-M-E, right? And I think even Walt Whitman said poem and not poem. Who says poem? Do poets say poem? And I think poet we don't need anymore, just a poer. Poet is the feminine version of a poe. And poe is a corruption of poor. There's a poor. We use it as a noun. Look at the pores or something like that. Not poor is like the things that get clogged that need steam treatment. Here's an example of a good analogy. My mother in the 70s had this device that you stuck your whole face in, like a mask, like you were watching some sort of old-timey personal movie or getting gassed, or I don't know what it was, but it was it would provide steam upon your face. And it was some kind of thing to open your pores. So the steam opens your pores like they're carnivorous plants or something. And they open up. And once they're open up, all then you can have access to the dirt and accumulated oils or deposits of gunk. The way they're described to me is it's like offal. It's like fat from a restaurant that's been like rendered like blah. And then you open it up, and then that allows you access to it, and then you can cleanse it with the cleansers or the waters, and then apply anyway. So this would open your pores, and I remember steaming my face, but for no reason, to no end, just to steam it, just to face sous vide. I just wanted, it felt good. I like a little steam on your face, isn't a bad thing. And to this day, I like to, there's a Suzuki movie like this where the fella huffs rice maker steam. Do you know this one? Something killer or nutty rice huffing killer or something it's called. And Tokyo Rice Huffer. And I don't know whether he gets pleasure from it or anything. And it reminded me of that. And anyway, so when our pores open, don't our pores open, and by extension, our poets? Now, I've met some, the only poets I've met with means are academics who have a chair. What do you mean? We all have a chair. No, it's a job where you just sit there or something. No, you have to do the stuff. They're very adamant. Teachers or professors especially will never tire of telling you how much they do. And they're right. They're absolutely right. There's no reason they shouldn't go around saying how hard their jobs are. They are. And are they underpaid? Perhaps. Who knows? I'm not there to tell a person how much money. I applaud anybody who makes money, especially, hucksters and charlatans. I'm for that. And the arts is wide open for me. There's no legitimacy or illegitimacy. Everybody's equal. And I think that, the poet, anybody, you write crude things in the bathrooms is the same as your chapbook. I believe it's all like that. Science, not so much. I don't know. There's probably some good carport science going on that I don't know about. And it is possible, and I guess in some disciplines, that you can make independent astronomy discoveries by having, like one time I was looking at the sky, and a brand new star formed right in front of me, probably 2-3 feet away. Now, a lot of people don't recognize that that's going on all the time. And it won't manifest itself for billions of years, not even a year. Because a year is a measure that we use for what the sun, going around the sun. It's another trip around the sun, and we call that a year. And then we get so many trips around the sun. And you think, I'd love just one giant-ass sun and just do 1 year that takes like 300. Now, who wants to be alive? I don't know how long we're alive, because it's relative. Seems life is short. Is it? Could be dragging. Who knows? It's perspective. Slow that brain down or something. It could drag. So I like that things are relative like that. And I always felt my show is relative. Please compare it not to other radio or not to other entertainment or not even to other art, but to things that just little like detritus and ephemera in your life. Like I want you to, compare this show. Its peers are things like an empty box of cheese crackers. You know, and how do I stand up to that? slightly more informative, right? Now, I don't have a word find on me, but you'll notice on the word find on those cheese box crackers, they're all centered around the cheese crisps. You're not finding words like kindness or ethics. No, you'll find words like cheese or snack or whatever shape the damn thing is in. It's usually an animal. That's how they get you used to eating very tiny animals. So I don't mind eating this giraffe because it's only the size of a brine shrimp. And, you know, it's funny, so Horton hears a who didn't change anything, I feel like. And that's the ultimate relativity program. Dr. Seuss was the size of my fingernail. Did you know that? On TV, you can't tell how big people are. Some are huge and some are very small. Who did I see the other day was big? Oh, it wasn't a famous person. Sorry. It's just somebody I know. I thought, oh, they're taller than I thought. Yeah, it wasn't famous. Who knows? You could be famous. I like meeting people and thinking, I wonder if they'll be famous in the future. And then I'll be already dead. So I can't name drop. I don't have a problem with name dropping. I do it because I don't want to carry those names around with me. So I get one and I'm going to drop this as soon as possible. Because also, what good is it? It's like a poker chip or something. Got to cash it in while it still has some kind of equivalency value. You take it home and it's worthless. You go, I've got this $50 poker chip from a casino that doesn't exist anymore. What good is it? What's the equivalent? It's like meeting, it's like, oh, I met Steve Lawrence. I didn't. But like, oh, nobody knows who he is anymore. So there you go. Went where? That's a poker chip I didn't cash in. Should have, the day I met Steve Lawrence, I didn't meet Steve Lawrence, go and tell everybody. Right? You know, I got my picture taken with Martin Short. I went out that day. I was like, I got my picture made with Martin Short. He didn't know who I am from Adam. It's one of those things where you line up and they take a picture. And honestly, could have been a cutout. Now I'm thinking it wasn't even him. It might have been. I don't know. But it was, we didn't interact and didn't say anything. But I just wanted you to know that I had met him, and that probably elevates me a little bit in your esteem, doesn't it? A little bit? Say, I think Hardy's hanging out with celebs. I am, a little bit. A lot of them you wouldn't know their names, but they're award winners and stuff. A lot of people just casual acquaintance people I hang with have won like big things, like, you know, like Pulitzers. And not Nobel Prizes, but I mean, maybe, who knows? I don't know. Like, I'm talking to him. Sometimes I think they have. There's a guy who painted my house that I was convinced knew a lot more than he was saying. I think you don't know what people used to be. Sometimes they used to go in any bar and you'll find somebody say, I used to work for NASA. And that could totally be. And you can't call him out for lying. And that could be. Tell me something smart. Can't. Not anymore. There was, though, a lady I remember. I was at the Georgia 400 flea market. Oh, is that a terrifying place? Why is that? I feel like there's just a systemic cultural lack of self-awareness that's dangerous and violent. And there's a lady sitting in one of those low-rider beach chairs. And she was selling, I don't remember what, maybe something religious, maybe not. And she was in shorts, tight shorts, low-rider beach. This is in the cover, right? It's all covered but not covered. It's open air but a ceiling. You've been to those kind of flea markets. And I walked past and I heard her say, yeah, I used to read the Bible in the Greek and Latin, but no more. And I just don't remember it anymore. And I was like, man, Duolingo. You got to do it. You probably take a course because it won't stick. Now, I don't know how you forget Greek and Latin. I guess it's possible. But I thought, I bet that lady is lying for clout. She wants it. And how do you call her on it if she said she already forgot? I used to be fluent in Greek or Latin. Oh, would you like to come over for dinner? Why, yes. I don't remember it anymore. Oh, it doesn't matter. You once were erudite, smart. Something like that. And, oh, it's beautiful. I would love to live surrounded by those that I could tell little. I could tell them poetic truths about myself. They wouldn't have to be literal. You know, see, because a lot of the reality of my life does not really correspond. It doesn't really with the way I see myself. Do you see what I'm saying? So I see myself as maybe I'm a lawyer. Maybe I'm a lawyer. I don't know. Maybe I feel like I have a PhD. So that's my poetic reality. So that's where my self-confidence level is at. And so maybe I should just say that literally. Why should I tell people, like, you know, just go ahead and say it. I'm a doctor. You know that. Now you know. I suspected Hardy was a doctor, but he had forgotten a lot of it. It's true. I do believe as a kid, though, I had physicians like that. Didn't you have a doctor as a kid? Maybe your grandma, your doctor was busy, so your grandmother took you to hers, and he seemed, it was just ancient, and I think they were. I don't think that was he was probably just 40. No, I don't think your skin can look like that at 40. I remember these doctors being, you know, really, really old. And I was definitely under the impression they had forgotten a lot and that medicine had moved on, because they did very little and they had very little things to say, and they'd just give you antibiotics or something and send you home. It was terrifying. And that's the way it used to. Now it's, is it better? Who knows? I don't know. I don't go to everybody's doctor. What I don't understand is, like, I only half listen to sort of like debates, but I hear something like, oh, but let you keep your doctor. That's so selfish. Let your doctor work, see other patients. You don't need to keep your doctor. Let him work. Let him go out there, have his office. So everything we got to bring home, put in a cage. You know, you don't get to, you get to take the glass home with you. Why? For a souvenir. Then you got a bunch of souvenirs. I resent now. I'm sorry, but I resent you now. Any establishment where I bought a drink where the perk is that you get to keep the glass. It's garbage. You know, I get that the milk company tried that, you know, buy our milk. You got to keep the carton. No. But there used to be, you go, why is that strange? Because when you used to get soda, they were like, we want the bottle back. Like, really? Yeah, we need the bottle back. We only have so many bottles. We can't make new bottles. There was a point, I guess, where they forgot how to make bottles. And so all these soda companies say, we need the bottle back. And you'd have to pay a deposit like you do for like a Russian shopping cart. But then you get your rubles back if you bring the cart back. But if not, you just got like a really cheap, you know, homeless caravan, or what do you call it, shopping cart, like the stuff to have your stuff in. And they'll get ones now that have a lid on them that can be locked. There was a store in my town that tried this thing, and I guess they dumped a lot of money on it, and they eventually abandoned it. They had these shopping carts that would lock up past a certain point in the parking lot. Like, so they would hit some kind of electronic barrier, and then when they would freeze, the wheels would freeze. It's so dumb. I don't know. I don't know why they think that's dumb. That's just, it feels like too much. It's like, that's too much. But we're losing a lot of money. But that had to be a lot of money. Because now the carts seem like they're worth even more. So they eventually that went away, and they're like, steal it. How would you make the carts undesirable by having them have an odor, or occasionally they give you, just shock you electronically. No, that's probably not good while you're shopping. I don't know. I'm not an anti-theft kind of person. I have created a society, a utopian society. It's just a little pamphlet. I mean, it's not fleshed out completely, where there is no thievery, because you don't need it. Why? Everything's worthless. Oh, that's not good. Isn't it? I don't know. I used to live among Neanderthals. No, they weren't Neanderthals. It was like before that. God, it was so far. Hang on. What is that? Anyway, it was a long time ago. But these hominoids that I lived with didn't really have things, you know? And so it's not to say they weren't selfish, they didn't get possessive. Like, it was very, very situational. So it's on my bone. That's my bone with meat on it. But as far as, like, stuff and everything, nobody had, it was first come, first serve, like your dogs. My dogs do it so well. And the cat participates, and that's first come, first serve bed. There's all these little soft beds. Well, it's just really, no matter how many you get, they only like one or two of them, right? So, but it's a definitely first come, first serve, and nobody will bother the other animal that's there first. That's very interesting. Maybe it's because all my pets like me are just super passive. You know, I guess you're using my bed. No, I don't know. I think it's just a rule. Why bother? Because they get mad about other stuff. You know, possessive about other things. And we all do, like their food or their butts or something. I understand that. There's a line with all creatures, perhaps. So there should be. Hey, stand up for yourself. Why? I don't know what's going on in your life. Let's move on then. I'll tell you about, I was never finished my ghost story. And a lot of people love ghost stories. They like to be scared. Ooh. I have a recurring dream where there's some kind of really frightening ghost or spirit of the dead right in the room with me, and I'm screaming, and it's trying to suck the life out of me or something. And she goes, that could be apnea. No, it's some other terror, and I'm just afraid of everything. And so you're not supposed to have nightmares as an adult. I found that out. So I feel like, I don't know, youthful? I feel maybe I'm youthful and not infantile, you know? But I do. I'm scared. What are the things in your nightmares? Well, I don't want to reveal too much about myself. One of them is not really a nightmare. It's a predicament, and it is my recurring dream, and I'm actually going to seek help for it because it's become... And that is, I'm in a hotel room, but there's no way I'm going to be able to vacate it in time. Like, because there's I brought my chest of drawers or something. I brought too much stuff. And I feel, you know, I can't, and they're going to, oh, but I'm losing the room. That's probably just fear of dying. Everything is. But the straight up nightmares, sometimes, loved ones falling into alligator pits or... They just have to do with loss and grief, just like everybody else's abject terror. And they're beautiful. How do you control your dreams? Is there any way? Yes, you stand up and say, I'm going to test and see if this is a dream. Now, no, wait a minute. I'm giving conflicting advice. I think I said don't do that. Now you're catching on. Now you're catching on. Hardy playing that, didn't he? Oh, yes, you're a tricky one, Hardy. You have to go out of your way not to say anything, don't you? Sometimes I do. It's worth it. Listen, I'm going to be honest with you. My grandmother, I believe this with all my heart, used to hire people to come over to do small tasks just to talk to them. And I know a lot of people do that, and that's this whole show. Is just lonely. But you're still alone. I know, but it kind of forces me to open up and talk to myself. And I have a lot of fun with me. You know, I wouldn't do it if I wasn't kind of, not forced to, but I didn't have a sort of a reason. I'm a person that needs, just like the Oliver Sacks movie/book, Awakenings, I didn't know where to start that sentence again. I'm somebody who needs to have their action initiated externally. You're not self-motivating. I'm self-motivating once you tell me to do something. But I gotta be set. And sometimes you don't have to say, it explicitly, you would say, like, aren't drawings of buildings nice or something like that? And then I'll go, okay. And then I'm self-motivated. But I don't just sit around. If nobody gives me an idea, I don't do anything. What were you doing before the show? I had stopped doing radio because no one was really actively asking me to do it anymore. And I thought, well, you don't want to overstay your welcome. So I was on a permanent hiatus, and I wasn't talking to anybody, even myself. It was a very lonely time. I just remember it took a lot of kung fu lessons or something. And then I didn't need kung fu anymore because I was back on the radio, and I felt wanted, at least tolerated. We are going to tolerate you, perhaps, for a while. And I didn't know it'd be this many years, and that's insane. But oh my goodness, thank you. I was sitting there alone in the wilderness. I had nowhere to go. I had no one to speak with. And then, out of nowhere, somebody came up to me, Martin Balsam or somebody. I don't know, Lee J. Cobb. And he said to me, he was just in the desert, and he said, hey, I'm one of the angry men. I go, I know you are. And I want you to do a thing. And then he disappeared. And that's something. And then I was in that hotel room where all my stuff is and I can't get it out and I can't get a moving van. But that's, I guess the pressure to move or something. I haven't moved a lot, but I've moved enough where you feel like, you know, you got to get out by this date. And it's kind of scary. And some people don't have anywhere to go and everything. And what am I going to do with my stuff? I knew some folks that happened to him during World War II. It's like, oh, it's time to flee from the Nazis. And they go, yeah, and the furniture? So you make a decision. Yeah, I'm taking the furniture. These people actually put the furniture in storage and then beat it out in the dead of night. That's one way to do it. That's not a bad way. And I don't want my stuff. Really, I don't think I can take it with me. I have built sort of an Egyptian-style tomb where I can be entombed with it, but I'm not even sure that's a good idea. I look forward to people visiting me in my tomb when I'm just a desiccated mummy sitting there on the chaise. Say, hey, Hardy. Maybe there'll be a little recording. That'd be good. Listen to this. My beautiful, almost perfectly preserved, desiccated corpse. Lie on a beautiful chaise. It was not there when it desiccated, so there's no stain. And I lie there, and there's like a AI-driven recording thing. So you come in, and it's this room, perfectly preserved room. It's a little dusty, you know, because it's just a single dead person lives there. And you come in, and you say, hi, Hardy, and I go, well, hello, like that. Now, my lips don't move or anything because I don't have any. That's the first thing to go is the lips. But I will be there in a beautiful, beaming, perpetual smile. And perhaps my teeth will appear whiter against my darkened, leathery flesh. This is still flesh. It's just leather, just plain leather. Oh, that's beautiful. And you can get away with it, too, you know. Go, what's just that face, real leather? Or is it vegan leather? It's real leather because it's my own face. Oh, that's nice. Nice touch. I find your show rather macabre, sir. Oh, I'm sorry. Well, I don't know what to say other than I have to make peace with the world and the way it is. And I have to purposely rob it of some of its hold on me. It is frightening me aesthetically and emotionally in some of the choices, and I don't even know the choices, that it has made. And so I need to confront life like that, and I need to take the power away from some of the things. And death, grief, all those things, I can experience them. I don't have to worry about not experiencing them. They're going to make themselves known. I don't have to try. I mean, you know, I'm going to cry regardless. I'm going to feel sad regardless. That's going to be, I don't need to search it out. I never search it out. It always finds me. It's wonderful. So the things that I look for, that I go actively looking for, are things like joy, are things like amusement. I'd like to feel, you know, at least bemused. What's bemused? I don't know. That's that kind of like, that's actually pretty funny. It kind of, I don't even know. Look it up. I know you know. I'll use it in context more. And it also helps when you act things out. Not laugh out loud funny. Ironic funny, I guess, is bemused. You know, like that's ironically funny. How about that? I think I was just bemused. Oh, I hope I'm bemusing you and amusing you. And what else? I'm not sure. I'm just trying to satisfy my, what is it? Ego's the wrong word. My desires with causing the least harm, because the harm, I don't mean to make it about me again, will impinge on my joy. So I'm trying to create a world where the joy is easy. That's all. So, oh my goodness, I'm bringing it to you, and I'm trying to be gentle as I can, and I'm being silly, and I'm trying to not be myself. And so this is the product. Oh, my friends, I was told a very wise piece of advice from the inside of a, I think it was a matzo or something. What do you call the High Holy Days prayer book? But they always got those, you know, sayings by famous rabbis. So there was a one in the back, and it said something like, if you're going to criticize, think for an hour and speak for 5 minutes. And if you're going to praise, think for 5 minutes and speak for an hour. Basically, it's like measure your harsh words, but let the praise flow. Why is that? Why shouldn't you be stingy with your praise? Because the world has a lack of that. There's a deficiency. And if you would like to bring balance to things, then what we need is more understanding. It seems we live in a world right now, oh my goodness, where I would like to provide more praise and love and tell you what's good about you. And you can take it from there. Oh, there's nothing good about me, Artie. Oh, yeah. Pretend there is. Just for all of us. Just for our sakes. Let's say we were on a team together. We're playing ball. We're playing bloopy ball. Bloopy ball? I don't even know what it is. Right. So you're probably not very good at it. Maybe I don't think I am. So what we need you to be is confident. So just for the team, I'm telling you, make the whole team better. Pretend you're good at bloopy ball.
All right.
Because if you walk around going like, I'm terrible, they're going to smell your fear and just bluff your way into mediocrity. Go ahead. Just to pretend that you're good at the bloopy ball. This isn't hard, but I'm negative self stuff. It really does. If you have any sense of the group or whatever, I'm telling you, help us out, and just, you know, notch the, you know, you're all right.
All right.
Here's how we're going to do it. We all have a lot of problems, and you stare at them, and they get a little bigger. So what we're going to do is we're going to go out and do things. We're going to do things together. We're going to work on a thing together. And that way, we have less time. We can distract ourselves most of life. If I had give you any advice, it's fool yourself more. You got to fool yourself out of some of this nonsense. You got to trick yourself into joy sometimes, because negative you is very convincing. And it just feels like the negative you is so convincing. That's where you could see it dominates every bad argument online. So what I'm saying is
nothing. You're absolutely right. Nothing.
You're right. Listen to this. What is that? That is the sound of your heart. It isn't, though. It's the sound of my lips pretending to be a heart. When that ghost came up to me, I asked myself, what does he want, first of all? That's why I wasn't very afraid, because I thought, this ghost seems to be trying to intimidate me when clearly he's clear. I can see right through him. And I can see right through him in more than one way. And often when people who aren't ghosts come up to me, run up to me on Pell Street like that and get in my face and say they're a ghost, I can see right through them too. I say, help, help, like that. I can't always do anything about the things I see in people. So often I run or I hide or I do a thing where I go, look, and I point over there and then I run the other direction. And that's an old one, but it wouldn't be old if it didn't work, you know? That's an old joke. It's an old joke because it's a good joke. It's an old offensive joke. It's an old offensive joke because it's an old... All right. Was it always? Yes. Then? I don't get it. No, I don't... Are you afraid to offend? Well, no, not afraid, but I don't know. I don't want to hurt. Are you afraid to hurt people? No, no. Are you afraid to stab people? I'm not afraid. Fear is not playing into it. I can have other reasons for what I do. And that's what I think is misplaced, perhaps, is, courage sometimes doesn't play into it. It's just cleverness. I believe I'm clever enough. I'm clever enough to, what? I don't know. Now I'm gone. To understand that camouflage and misdirection and story disruption and what else? Confusion, benign confusion, benevolent confusion. I think is very important. I think it's not, is it chaos? What's a soft chaos? It's a soft chaos. It's Charles. It's not chaos with a K. That's from Get Smart. That's how that got. But we do something here called Charles. And that is a soft, beautiful, soft chaos. Is it chaotic? No, it's psychotic. No, that doesn't work. It isn't, though. It's coming from you all directions like a, oh my goodness, like a hug from, what's something that has more arms than an octopus? A millipede, but they're tiny. Octopus-sized arms? Octopus... you have the arms have the girth, is a girth is a terrible word to use, but I'm going to use it. They're the size of octopus arms, but there's 1,000 of them like a millipede. And they're also not literal. And I wrap them around you in a hug, and you float as in a womb or a sensory deprivation tank. The womb is actually based on the deprivation tank. Did you know that? Isn't that weird? That came first. And then there's this sort of evolutionary mimicry where the bodies went, that'd be a nice way to start things. Because it used to be an egg. And then, just like Mork from Ork, that's what you say. And some species like Ork still do that. Mork came to Earth, kicked open his egg. But we say, I'm going to start with a mikveh. Right? I'm going to have a full submersion event and sensory deprivation mikveh, a.k.a. womb, and amniotic fluid or saline solution or city tap water. I don't even know. And you float in there, and I want you to float. I want my words to be like human gut fluid. That little baby's floating, you're a little baby. And I want you to float in my words, just like your wishes of John Hurt, William Hart Hurt, which is the one from Altered States. He's floating in the William Hard. He's floating in the sensory deprivation tank like a baby. Then he turns into a monster or something, like he might have dosed first. I can't remember. I haven't seen the movie in so long. And then there's a white worm in there with him. And, oh, Oliver Reed breathes fire or vomits on him. I don't remember. It all runs together as you get older. It's lovely. You don't have to revisit these movies. They revisit you. They come to you in all sorts of inopportune times. Sometimes they obscure your visual field while you're trying to talk to somebody and go, whoop, there's an old movie. And, well, I guess I'm watching it while I'm talking to so-and-so. No, I'm not actively hallucinating. I don't even remember how to anymore. I used to back in the day. Oh, my gosh, things I've forgotten. Physics. I've certainly forgotten a lot of my communication skills. That is for sure. People tried to show me how to write stories or... And they failed miserably. I say they failed. I guess I did. It's hard to know, like, in these teacher-student relationships, who's really failing. Because, you know, you say, oh, you failed. Did I, though? What were you trying to do? Teach you math. What happened? You didn't learn it. Well, who failed? We both failed. I feel like we failed together. What's a C? C says that's even worse for both of us. Because I kind of learned, but you were probably boring. A says my parents are insufferable. I don't know. B probably says you're a halfway decent teacher. I don't know. I'd want all my students just to get Bs. Even the A students. Just as an act of rebellion. So you show your parents. You don't have to. You can get a B and still know everything. And I've done that. I'd love to be an example to young people. I do, though. I do. I try to. Because I tell you, I've nailed the, like, you know, sharing thing. I can share. Great. I'm so sophisticated about it. I will do that Japanese thing where I will not take the last dumpling. I was just eating with some folks and they just sat there. That last one sat there until someone thought to cut it in half. And then there were two. So there was no longer a last one. And then I don't know, that solved it. I never even thought to do that. I was among geniuses, though. Sometimes I dine with geniuses. You know, this is a really, really sad, lonely thing. Thomas Jefferson, they said something like that when he dined alone. He would dine with the smartest person, but he was alone or something. I don't know. But they imply that he had no peers, and so he just ate by himself. Because he had no intellectual peers. So I'm always dying. I'm dying full cafeterias, places where they leave the G off of the word, you know. It's just a lot of anapostrophe places. Grilling, sizzling, all those places I eat at. And there's lots of folks there, and they all feel like my peers. And I watch them, and they totally are. A lot of them, maybe, I might even have something to teach them about not screaming at their loved ones. But that's pretty much an easy one to do. A lot of the not behavior is, you know, it's somewhat easier than the doing behavior. For instance, I am not a Marine. And I find that easier than being a Marine. See how that works? So sometimes the absence of something is very easy. It's been really easy for me to resist that. You know? And maybe smoking cigarettes, maybe not the same thing. That might be a little harder, but I don't do that. What else don't I do that's harmful for me? I don't know. I never probably don't lop off any limbs or anything like that. I eat candy, though. I do eat candy, but I like hard candy and I like citrus candy. I don't, not as much chocolate or anything. We're not wondering. I knew you weren't, but I guess it's because I think what I crave are vitamins, and I think the candy's going to have them. Because I go for the fruit stuff. I think a lot of people do. Like, that's what's just like, God, I want an orange soda really bad. I think what it's saying is, like, you need antioxidants or something. Because I always feel like, oh, I need fruit. I really should have fruit. Fruit's a little acidy, right? But Starburst seemed just right. So I've got to, I guess I could have the gummy vitamins make me a little sick. So I don't know about that. What? I just feel like they do. And I want to sell gummies that don't do anything. They do that online. I see that. I say, oh, they got the pot gummies, and then they have just like hippie gummies. But they're not, I guess they're CBD or something like that. That's beautiful. I'm on, right now, I'm on my doctor put me on heavy doses of something called, what's it called? Spurious, not placebo, something like that. I think it's spurious something. But it's designed, it's mainly psychological. So the doctor said to me, these pills don't do anything. And I go, come on. And they go, nope, they don't do anything. I go, okay, well, we'll see. I said, what is it that they don't do? And then the doctor says, well, they're supposed to do all this, that, and the other thing, but they don't. And I go, well, we'll see about that. And then my natural contradictory nature, see, they're using reverse psychology. These are reverse psychology placebos. I go, we'll see. I bet they do something. And it's funny. They were actually antidepressants. They weren't placebos. So I don't know. The experiment didn't work very well. I'm done now. I'm making my own pills out of ground up candy. I take the little, you can get the little capsules at the food co-op or, you know, any kind of health food store. And you go, I can make my own pills? They go, yeah. So I bought all the pharmacy thing where you scrape the, and I just make fanciful ones. Like I'll make, I made some baking powder ones. Or not baking, but baking soda. I thought these would be good to calm my stomach. Or I'll just make them out of spices. Like people do turmeric for real. So I thought, well, you know, I can make pills out of cumin. And woo, they wreak havoc on my body odor. I'm not going to lie to you. So the cumin pill experiment, people take garlic pills. I'm not even lying. And dehydrated lettuce is a biggie. How many of you call arugula rocket? How many of you call it rocket? Just say in the comments if you call arugula rocket. I love you. And do you like it? Is it too spicy for you? Do you like peppery greens? Do you know him? It's so funny, though. If your last name is Brown or Green, or somebody's going to call you Crispy or, you know, Salad, that's going to be your nickname. I'd love it. If my last name was Brown, I'd want to be Golden Brown or something. That'd be fun. You're Hardy White. Oh, I forgot my own name. That's right. That's literally happened to me. Then Hardy is not your given name? So it's just a joke name because your last name's White? So somebody, like, saw the bread and started calling you Hardy White? So you really, like, what, like William Hardy White or something like that, or middle initial H Hardy White? Hardy Hardy White? Are you Hardy Hardy White? Are you William Carlos Williams? Are you Ford Maddox Ford? Are you Ford Maddox Ford Chevrolet? Which are you? What's your name? What's your backstory? What's your origin story, they say now, assuming they assume everybody's a superhero. You are listening to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in Rockland County in New York City, New York, and online, WFMU.org, worldwide freeform radio. Thank you for listening so much. Oh, my friends, I will see you again next week.
Twins' name was Ebony. Her name was Mahogany. 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 Twins' name was Ebony. Twins' name was Ebony. We'll be right back.
New York Giants. We're gonna do this one for PDP.
Congratulations, so slick.
It's your boy Big Avail.
When at first I caught you creeping, wasn't even sleeping. She hit the speaker and bleeped him, peeped him. My nigga baseball was ready to beat him, leak him. I told my nigga chill, I don't be cheating. Oh, used to spend and give you money. We used to